Talking now with Kent Backus of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's D.C. office. Kent, the Trump administration continues to work at a lot of different levels. They've already had a little bit of a success and working on trying to add some more to their win column, I guess you might say. I thought we might kind of from a perspective of some of our biggest beef customers, talk a little bit about some of the relations that we've been trying to establish. At the top of the list to me is the success of the Korean free trade agreement. Chorus has been redone, and Korea, the latest beef export numbers, they show that they're on fire as far as buying U.S. beef. It's an important market for us, and it was an agreement that is good for us.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, the Korea free trade agreement is a prime example of how trade agreements can benefit U.S. agriculture. When you look at our sales prior to the implementation of the Korea Free Trade Agreement, we were already starting to trend up, but we still ran into this massive 40% tariff that really, it limited our potential there. We were subject to, more competition from, cheaper sources, countries like Australia, other places like that. And we were still recovering from the BSE scare. And keep in mind, 10 years ago, in June 2008, there were 600,000 people protesting in the streets of Seoul over the importation of U.S. beef. And now we're the number one source of beef imported into Korea. And we have overtaken the Australians. We have essentially pushed them out of a lot of the major markets. We have captured a lot of the fresh market, which is the high-value products there. And really... We're on track now to surpass last year's record-setting export numbers just through September. So, I mean, this is a great market for us. It's a billion-dollar market. Just through August, as the latest numbers show, it was a $1.15 billion market for us. So this is big. And a lot of why that's happened is that there's a lot of demand in Korea. They really enjoy the high-quality U.S. beef that they can purchase. But bringing that tariff down has opened up a lot of opportunities for other consumers that we didn't reach before. And so I think we haven't really even met our full potential there. That tariff is only about halfway to zero. That 40% tariff will go all the way to zero here in just a few more years. And between now and then, we still have about an 8% tariff rate advantage over the Australians. We'll have that for another 5 or 6 years. That gives us an opportunity to really market to the Korean consumers and develop a very loyal and regular client base there. And you keep in mind, this is a growing market. These consumers love beef. They love our beef. We've come a long way in the last 10 years, and we still have a lot of unmet potential in that market.
Now, the other, they're obviously right now the number two market for U.S. beef. Number one is a market that we're hoping that some things can come of this early conversation, this latest conversation that the president has had with the prime minister of Japan, Mr. Abe. Japan is our number one market. Obviously, I've got the headwinds of a big tariff that we're already facing, but the hope is that we can get that taken care of, right?
Well, that's exactly the point, is that we want to get that tariff out of the way. We face a 38.5% tariff in the Japanese market, just like the Korean market. That's one of the biggest hindrances that we've had. And once we can get that out of the way, we've already really focused on developing the Japanese consumer over the last several years. That's become a very important market to us, our biggest export market by far. It accounts for almost 25% of our beef export sales. So you think about that. We're selling close to $2 billion worth of beef in a market where we still face a 38.5% tariff. There's a lot of opportunity to really develop more of the supply chain there, more of the consumer base. We've got to address that tariff. Now, I don't know if that'll be something that would be in one of the earlier rounds, an early harvest is what they like to refer to in these trade negotiations. But it's certainly an issue we want to address in the overall negotiation. Now, I think the other thing to keep in mind is that a lot of other people see Japan as a very important market. And that's why we need to move quickly to establish a free trade agreement with the Japanese. When you look at countries like Australia that already have a trade agreement with Japan, and you look at the European Union that also has a trade agreement with Japan, there's already a lot of competition there that could affect our long-term success in that market. They have lower tariffs in that market. Well, we also have to look at Canada and New Zealand and Mexico, who will also have lower tariffs in that market once the TPP 2.0 or the Modified Trans-Pacific Partnership is implemented. And they are very close to having enough countries who ratify that agreement for it to go into effect. So it's a matter of time, and that's why this timing is so important to us. If we don't do anything, and if we continue to drag our feet, and this 38.5% tariff stays in place, even though we've had all this growth in the Japanese market, we could see that start to go away. And a lot of it just because it's a matter of price points. It's a matter of we're already a very expensive product because we're a very high-quality product. And if we have a greater difference in tariffs, if we have a higher tariff than our competitors, then it disincentivizes the Japanese importers to purchasing our beef. So, you know, there have been some studies done. We could lose anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion in potential sales if we don't address this tariff, and that's why it's important to us. And the timing is very important, too, and that's why this Japan trade agreement is one of the top priorities for us at NCBA.
Might shift gears and come back a little closer to home. This North American agreement, USMCA, that's been announced by the president. First, Mexico, kind of at the 11th hour, the Canadians decided they needed to be on board as well. This is an agreement that maybe doesn't do anything directly for U.S. beef exports into those countries, but it kind of leaves us alone, it seems like.
Well, that's what we wanted all along was, I mean, you don't want to mess with a good thing. And when you look at NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement that we've been operating under for the last, you know, almost 25 years, we had duty-free, unrestricted access into those markets. And so we were able to develop a very good consumer base in Mexico and market a lot of products that don't sell at a premium here in the U.S. We were also able to develop the Canadian market, and Canada was already a pretty good market for us, but this just opened up a lot more opportunities. And so we obviously didn't want to jeopardize that. We didn't want to bring back, you know, any tariffs or any quotas or anything like that would jeopardize where we are. We also didn't want to see, you know, other policies that have failed in the past, like mandatory country of origin labeling, sneak back in to the process here. And so we're glad to see that, you know, none of those changes were included. Keep in mind, the proponents of M-Cool talk about how it would benefit producers and consumers and everything else, and it's nothing but a government-mandated marketing program that does nothing to address food safety, and it did nothing to build consumer confidence. What it did was it almost risked getting the U.S. ag industry on the receiving end of $1 billion worth of retaliatory tariffs from Canada and Mexico. We obviously don't want to go down that path again. I think everyone in the industry has had enough of that. They've had a fill of that already. Policy didn't work. We're glad it didn't come back into NAFTA under this new agreement. And so, you know, I think it'll be the other thing I think it'll be the most challenging is making sure we call it the right agreement. You know, it's hard when you've called something NAFTA for 25 years. Now you got to call it the USMCA. So that's probably one of the biggest challenges ahead of us. But hopefully we can see Congress, you know, come down and be able to implement this, you know, here in the next few months. But just given the political landscape, I think it'll probably be sometime in the new year before we're able to get to it.
Let's talk just a little bit about the situation with China. It seems that if anything, with these, you know, with the Korean thing done, with the USMCA, now pretty well put to bed. The Trump administration seems to be ramping up a little bit more, at least the conversation, the rhetoric. Vice President Pence making some comments over the weekend. Where are we going? In other words, how is this thing with China finally going to play out, you think?
Well, I think that when you look at the use of tariffs to create leverage, that's been the goal all along, and it's been successful. It worked bringing Korea, the threat of withdrawing from the agreement and using tariffs, that brought them to the table. It brought Mexico to the table to renegotiate. It's brought the Canadians to the table. With China, the U.S. has already targeted almost half of the $500 billion worth of goods we import. And China's feeling the pain. And so much to the point now they're actually scrambling to find ways to keep their currency from sliding even further. They have to figure out how they're going to keep their economic growth moving forward. It's caused a lot of stability issues in China. And so China has responded by targeting, you know, agricultural goods. I don't think the tariffs are going to let up anytime soon. I still think that China has to really consider making some systemic changes in their state-run economy. Keep in mind, it's still a very communist country, and the fact that the government, while they may not be government companies, there are government seats on the boards of those companies. And so the government's still very much involved in the financing of these projects and everything else. And so, that puts American companies at a disadvantage. I don't think the administration is going to let up anytime soon. China has a lot to lose here, and they have a lot more to lose. I think what some people are looking at now is the fact that we have all of these tariffs on Chinese imports, but if their currency continues to slide, that means that the yuan, their dollar, will continue to weaken, and that just that may actually zero out some of the effects of the tariffs by making their products that much more inexpensive. So I think the tariffs will be effective to a point, and I think the administration will continue to use that leverage until China agrees to make some major changes and to play on a fair level playing field.
Sounds like the way the Chinese continue to talk, they while they're trying to deal with some of the consequences of these tariffs, at the same time they're willing to take the pain for at least a while till maybe early next year.
Well, I think this is kind of the old the old story of you got the two the two big kids in on the block, and they're finally going to square off, and we're in the middle of that now. Where this spills over, where it escalates, I think that's anyone's speculation for now. I think the U.S. economy is continuing to thrive. I think that we will adjust. At the same time, I think China, they have their own resiliency, and they'll be able to adjust and respond accordingly. So I think at the end of the day, both countries want to find a mutually beneficial path forward. When that happens is anyone's guess, but we're hoping it's sooner rather than later.
All righty. Hey, one other question in regards to, the other country that we've heard the Trump administration talk about in regards to renegotiating, and there was a big announcement a few weeks back that we'd made some progress in dealing with the European Union. If we could get that done, obviously, that would be good for the beef industry as well.
Well, I think we would certainly welcome any talks with the European Union to remove the just some of the onerous and non-science-based regulations they have that limit our ability to sell product to European consumers who desperately want our product. Europe is one of the most protectionist economies in the world. While they may not necessarily use tariffs to make trade restrictive, they use non-tariff trade barriers, and it's everything from restrictions on GMOs, to restricting what we can call certain dairy products, to restricting the use of safe and efficient production technologies in our livestock. This is a country that picks and chooses. This is an economy that picks and chooses which of the WTO standards they want to abide by. And even though we have a WTO ruling supporting our ability to use these safe technologies in beef production, Europe just chooses not to obey that. And so, you know, it's caused a lot of friction. We need them to be better trade partners. I think if anything has shown us over the last 20 years is that they will find ways around the rules. They don't always abide by the spirit of the agreement or the terms as they're written. And so we need to make sure that any agreement that moves forward addresses, first and foremost, the non-tariff barriers that we currently face. And secondly, we need to make sure that they don't, that they're not able just to come in on the backside and put up more roadblocks, and we'd just be right back in the situation we're in. And if you think that that wouldn't happen, just look to our neighbors to the north in Canada. They have they've had an agreement now for over a year. They still can't sell any product over there. So, you know, Europe is good on paper, but we need to see real principles in any trade agreement moving forward.
Thanks, Kent. Kent Backus of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's D.C. office. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.